good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our listeners joining us from every corner of the world. Thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, the station where conversations count. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you're listening to On the Reading News Analysis, your weekday deep dive into the issues shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, it's Thursday, the 6th of November, 2025, and as the week begins to wind down, we're turning our focus to the stories that continue to move the nation from the corridors of policy to the pulse of our communities. Now here on the Reading News Analysis, we don't just tell you what's happening, we explore why it's happening, how it affects you, and what it means for Namibia's future. This is the space where facts meet context and analysis meets accountability. Every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we go beyond the headlines, unpacking the layers of our national discourse through expert interviews, archived audio, sharp commentary, and your voices. Because in a time when information moves fast, understanding must move deeper. Now today, we'll continue asking the hard questions, revisiting the week's biggest developments, and shedding light on the stories that deserve a second look, all with the clarity, the balance, and credibility you've come to expect from On The Radar News Analysis. And remember, you can catch On The Radar live across all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us on the Eagle FM app, or join the conversation on our WhatsApp channel for exclusive insights, clips, and behind-the-scenes updates. So wherever you're tuning in from, your home, your car, or your office, stay with us. Stay thoughtful, stay curious, because here on The Radar, Namibia doesn't just listen, Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump into today's top stories. The Youth Climate Change Conference 2025 took place in Ndangwa, Oshana region. Now this year's conference, held under the theme Our Climate, Our Responsibility, Namibian Youth in Action, aims to amplify the voices of young Namibians in the national climate discourse and promote youth-led climate solutions. Researcher and policy developer Jasper Kasoma from the Namibian Youth on Renewable Energy says this year's Youth Climate Change Conference successfully brought together 150 young people from across Namibia to engage in dialogue and action on climate-related issues. Now, speaking to Eagle FM, Kasoma highlighted that the annual conference served as a vital platform for youth to exchange ideas, build knowledge, and strengthen advocacy around pressing environmental challenges. This year's conference was a great success. We had young people discussing important topics such as conversations, biodiversity, climate change, mitigation, climate financing. Kasoma said, it's important that the youth are not only informed but also actively involved in shaping the country's response to climate change. Now, the conference forms a part of a broader national regional efforts to promote youth participation in climate policy and green innovation, aligning with Namibia's commitments under the Paris Agreement and the nationally determined contributions, that is NDCs. Kasoma further noted that the event's success demonstrated a growing enthusiasm among Namibian youth to take ownership of climate solutions. He added that the organizers are eager to make the conference an annual fixture on the availability, of course, depending on the availability of funding and partnership. And I quote, if we can secure the necessary support, we intend to host the conference again next year, continuing to empower young Namibians with the skills and knowledge to lead on climate issues. Now, the Young Climate Change Conference continues to play a pivotal role in amplifying young voices in environmental policy discussions, for fostering collaboration between youth-led organizations, government agencies, and international partners working towards a sustainable future. Let's now, of course, take a listen to Jasper Kasoma.
My name is Jasper Kasoma. I'm a research and policy at the Namibian Youth on Energy, and one of the partner organizations with SOS Students Village. And of course, we partner with youth organizations such as Youth for Ken, Environmental Education, and Kulunga Foundation, really to deliberate and come together for the Youth Climate Change Conference for Namibia. And we are in Ndangwa to engage young people across the country. We got plus minus 150 youth who are deliberately or engaging with other youth of course, to find meaningful ways on how they can combat or find initiatives as far as the climate change is concerned. So I'd like to say that so far it's going so well. We had a robust discussion on conservation, biodiversity, and also on climate change mitigation, where we had a presentation from the Green Hydrogen Program. We also had a discussion on climate finance, where we honored to have the Environmental Investment Fund of Namibia give a presentation and also to share some of the opportunities that may be available when it comes to climate finance. As you are aware, Namibia is one of the countries that is bidding for the GCF Green Climate Fund regional office. And it's also now the platform is such that we can see how best we can influence policy and also support the government initiative, more especially when it comes to clean energy and ideally education, to find out on how climate change will become fashionable and part of the household in education. So I would say, in a nutshell, really, we are preparing a position paper and we share with different stakeholders and maybe taken back to as far as the conference of party, the Brazil, Belém. With that, I really want to thank you for this opportunity.
And there you had it from him. Let's now take a listen to Dr. Sioni Ikela from IUM, and Dr. Sioni is a researcher.
So then I was now telling the people that this year we are going to get good rain because the brown eagle actually prospects good rain. Cattle recruit the same thing. I don't know where they go and live, but they only come when there's good rain. Okay? So cultural context, indigenous knowledge actually encapsulates culture. Some of you, when somebody is saying, yeah, don't throw water in the night, yeah, it's a taboo or can be regarded as a restriction. But then it means something. Because then, when you don't throw that water, the next day, you will find the water in a bucket, nicely filtered. Then you will end up using that water to water your plants in the garden or to give to chickens. So in a way, you have contributed to water conservation. Okay? It's about oral tradition. Nowadays, people are just watching Netflix. They are on, what is this one? TikTok, not even for good things. Women are taking pictures like this. They are dancing half naked. You see, they are not teaching anything. Because we could have used that time for a shungi, because that is where we transfer knowledge to the next generation. But now everything is overtaken by soccer. Then women begin to hate their men because they are watching these other people from Europe who play soccer. But when you say, can you watch KK Paris? They say, no. See? Then empirical understanding, this is based on a long-term observation. The elderly people are good here. Nowadays, we are not concerned about these things. That's why somebody from Europe came to discover this frog that you people like so much. You know that bullfrog that you eat every season? What? It was discovered by somebody from France, if I'm not mistaken. I think last year. And gave it a name which bears his name. No scientific name. There is always a name of somebody who discovered it. You have been eating something you don't know. Okay? Because we don't observe things anymore. Okay, then it's about community centric. It actually unites people behind a certain belief. Okay, because of time, I have to rush him, otherwise, we will not finish. And there are interesting things at the end. You would want to extend the time. Okay, the importance of indigenous knowledge is that this holistic approach, it actually includes everybody in terms of protecting the environment, in terms of taking care of the society. That's why if it's about hunting, the traditional leader used to announce, it's now time for hunting. And it's the time when the females are not pregnant. Not female animal, but animals. Okay. We have a place called Edosha National Park. Mm. It is actually a wrong name. That is Edosha National Park. Edosha means pinpointing an animal that can be hunted. Because that is where Nihara used to go and hunt. And you see, some people came, they cannot pronounce it, and they say Edosha. And you people followed suit. I don't understand why. Now the thing doesn't have a name. Who know what is Edosha? What is Edosha? Yeah, exactly. So you don't know what is Edosha. It's actually Edosha. Pinpointing when you are hunting. No, we can hunt that one because it's not pregnant. We can hunt that one because it's not an old bull. People don't hunt old bull, otherwise you are losing genes. That's why you must not hate old people. Eh? People are hating old people. Old people have got good genes. Okay, so it actually emphasizes the respect of nature and sustainable practices. It's about making sure that we don't finish, giving resources enough time to replenish. Okay? Then it's about ecological sustainability. There must be some sort of programs that actually ensures that you are able to adapt to the climate change. That's why people have been changing over practices of cultivation. Okay? Some years they will make sure that they use kashana, some years they make sure that they use those Oshiwambo Mahambu that are tall, eh? Very tall. But nowadays, these young women that are married here, so if you ask them what type of Mahambu you have, they only have kashana.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Type of Mahambu you have, they only have kashana. They don't have, now when in good years of good rain, they suffer because this kashana will get rotten. But the old ones like my grandmother, they know what to sow in years of good rain. Okay, cultural heritage is about preserving our tradition. And I can tell you, if you prescribe to your tradition, you will be able to adapt to climate change. Because your way of living depends on the behavior of the environment. It's about social cohesion and identity. Some of you don't want to identify yourself with your culture. Our culture is not nice. Which culture is nice? And some of you who are Christian, Papa go deeper, you actually shying away from your tradition. Even Jesus, whom we respect so much, our Savior, had a culture. That's why he went through this, what is it, complicated that? Circumcision. But now you are there told if you put a bead around your neck, it's satanic, or around your waist. Was Jesus satanic for going through that thing? Huh?
No.
Okay? So it's about innovation and adaptation. There are sort of innovation in our indigenous knowledge. People, when they started cultivation, plowing those years, they used to plow in seconds. I don't know whether you know. And I know you will not know because you are not spending your time with your great parents. Your great parents nowadays TV. Okay? So they used to plow in circles. Then during spring or when they actually uproot all the stems in the field. And then some of you get angry when they do these things. Why do they do that? Because they want to make sure that all the eggs of insects first are actually bent down by the sun. That's why it's very hot. Only people like me who are true Africans cannot suffer from the sun. Because the melanin is very strong. Okay, it's about equity and social justice. So indigenous knowledge makes sure that everybody's decision, everybody's view are considered in decision making. It's about development. So it gives rooms for development. That's why it evolves. But if we make sure that we preserve it. Okay, some limitations in terms of indigenous knowledge is that there are no documents. So our things are not written. Only some of us begin to write these things. And we are facing resistance because they are saying apparently cannot be proven. But it can be proven. Many of you, or maybe fewer, heard about Onjarao Kakua. Who heard about Onjarao Kakua? None. Don't disappoint me. You heard about Onjarao Kakua? What does it mean? So there is a belief, which is true, that every seventh year you are likely to experience drought. Okay? And through my study, when I did my master, I traced this thing because my topic was influence of indigenous knowledge in management of water in Kuberai Etosha Basin, Moambo. From 1917, I could trace that every seventh year there was a drought. Okay? 1917, 1927, 1937, 1947, most of the time, around those years, there is always drought. Okay? But it's a challenge because these things are not written. Integration with modern science. Nowadays, if you are speaking about things that are European, you are regarded as a true scientist. When you say no, but my grandmother used to do this, then you are regarded as this one is just here to carry theories. But there are actually practices that are working. External resources, so there are pressures in terms of climate change and rate degradation. There are now some things that you find in your area which were not there before. Because of the rate degradation, the land is losing fertility, new trees are growing in, the old ones are getting out, and maybe they are the ones that used to help you in terms of looking at the issue of climate change. Recognition and validation, there are limited influence in formal decision making because they are going to say you cannot prove it because it's not documented. Okay, I want us now to look into some of the specific things that are relevant to climate change. Cattle behavior, for example, if a lot of cows give birth to a lot of male calves, my friend, it will be a dry rain with a lot of lightnings. So you must be ready for lightnings. Even if you receive heavy rain, there will be no a lot of water running around. There will be no surface running off. Because it's a dry rain. Okay? Also, when you are at your cattle post, the boys, nowadays the boys, they are too soft. I don't know. You don't distinguish between a girl or a boy child. What is happening? Because we don't take children to cattle post. So they must know, they have to wake up in the morning to check how the animal behaves. If you find your cattle lying like this, hopelessness, it means there is no good rain. They are wondering how are we going to survive. Okay? Termite hills, if you go in Ishana, especially in Ukwambi there, You will find, like now, you will find a lot of small hills of termites. That actually symbolizes good heaps of mahangu. So meaning there is good rain. Or then if you find the termites, you know they always carry debris, those small debris. When they are upright, it shows hope. But when they are across, horizontal, there is no good future. So we must prepare for drought. Direction of the wind. Some people, can you tell me, this wind that we always get, the big one, they come from which side? Come from the west, they say west. She's also saying west. You are from which area? Mambwena. You are from which area? Your village. Mkundaweni? Utapi. Okay. Sandstorm, it comes from which side? From where? Southeast. Umbuanu? Okay. A serious sandstorm would always come from either east or south. We will never come see it coming from this side or this side. Okay? Now, there is a time when you know that fresh breeze wind that will blow from the west to the east. And we say, go and fetch rain. Then, so if you experience that, you must know that there will be good rain, or the rain season is nearing. Okay? Then plant behavior. This year, I was somewhere at the Odonga village there, I think in toward the end of August. Then I have noticed that some acacia started to flower already. So that is actually to say the rain season is actually nearing, the prospect is good. Acacia or omiti or omano? Omano. Yeah. So, why do some of this acacia begins to flower? Because as the rainy season near, the water underground begin to come up. Then the root is able to reach there, some wetness underground. Okay. There are also some trees, especially the palm trees and the marula. When one side of the marula is bearing fruit, in some areas, my friend, fear the coming season, there will be no rain. But some, when they are bear a lot of fruit, then also hunger, because you are going now to actually survive on those fruit. Okay? Some birds like Keter Egret that I explained earlier, brown eagle, tura, you see it there, from July there, it begins to do those things in the morning. It will be very high in the sky, but it will eventually begin to come down. When they come down in the morning, so it symbolizes that the rain is actually near and the prospect is good. Eroro, I have already spoken about it.
You've leveled up in life, and now it's time to level up your contact. MTC is changing the game with our new contract data plans. More data, more voice minutes, and more SMSs. Core of everything you need. Plans start from just $199 per month. And for a limited new customer's score, an extra 10 gigabytes of data valid for 90 days, absolutely free. Don't wait. Visit any MTC mobile home or call 12000 to level up today. MTC, make the connection.
Okay, welcome back. Now, you are listening to Dr. Sioni Ikela. that you, he's from the International University of Management. And I allowed that one to play, so that you could listen. And I'm sure there are people who really appreciate, certain people who are gifted or have the wisdom of, predicting, climate patterns. For some, they do, it's because of the knowledge that they have, because of what they have studied. And for others, it's really from the environment they grew up in, and also how their parents or their grandparents used to predict how rain is going to be or how climate is going to be. Now, some of these things ought to be very appreciated, because, I mean, for others, it's something that they, without a doubt, they are definitely sure that they can predict how climate is going to be for the next couple of months or for the next few days. And for you, you'll be wondering what this person is saying. As much as they try to pull you in on the knowledge and sort of educate you, it becomes a little bit difficult to understand. But then there are still some people who still grasp it from how they explain. But nonetheless, let's get into a discussion on climate change now. Now, climate change refers to the long-term warming of the planet due to an increase in average global temperatures. Now, this phenomenon is primarily caused by human activities that release greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide and methane into the atmosphere, leading to a trap of heat and a rise in temperature. For those of you who did physical science in high school, perhaps only went up until that time, you remember some of this. And of course, key aspects of climate change are such as greenhouse effect, the natural process that occurs when certain gases in the atmosphere, like for instance carbon dioxide and water vapor or H2O, trap heat from the sun, keeping the planet warm enough to sustain it. Also, global warming, which is the increase in the Earth's average surface temperature due to human activities, primarily the emission of greenhouse gases. And you have noticed over time, if you've been around for some time, you really do compare how when summer comes now compared to some years in the past, there's a really huge difference. It feels a bit hotter now compared to some of those other times. Also, climate impact, rising temperatures that lead to more extreme weather events such as heat waves, drought, and heavy rainfall, affecting the ecosystems, human health, and economies. Now, the effects of climate change are as follow: rising sea levels, that is melting, and ice sheets contribute. Yes, ice sheets contribute to sea level rise, and they threaten coastal communities and ecosystems. Now, extreme weather events, in the instance of increased frequency and intensity of natural disasters like hurricanes, wildfires, and floods, those ones then lead to extreme weather events, leading to a climate change, loss of biodiversity, changes in temperature and precipitation patterns alter ecosystems that lead to species extinction and disruptions in the food chain. Also, water scarcity, changes in precipitation patterns, and increased evaporation due to warmer temperatures can also lead to droughts and water shortages. Now, climate change mitigation strategies, there are quite a number of, a few of them that can be implied. One of them that has been at the talk of many nations, I would say, recently, and of course Namibia has been also playing its part in such, is renewable energy, that is transitioning to solar, wind, and other renewable energy sources in order to reduce dependency on fossil fuels, and energy efficiency also by improving energy efficiency in buildings, in transportation, and the industry to help reduce energy consumption. Okay, and sustainable land use, that is by implementing practices like reforestation, sustainable agriculture, and reducing deforestation, or climate resilient infrastructure, that is building infrastructure that can withhold or withstand the impacts of climate change, such as seawalls and green roofs. Now, of course, Namibia and Oceania region playing its part now in the instance of the Youth Climate Change Conference. is part of a youth involvement, or it's a very important aspect by the youth and being done by the youth. Now, innovative solutions, as young people can now develop innovative solutions to climate changes, and youth can play a crucial role in advocating for climate policies and actions, because they are more at the core, and when they are at the core and at the front of advocacy, they are more likely to make impact, because they will be speaking to other youth and, of course, also to adults. But you know how when youth-led initiatives are really done in a manner that is well attributable, in a manner that is well organized, they tend to make major impact in terms of advocacy and also actions, you know. Community engagement. By that, youth people or young people can engage their communities in climate change awareness and also climate change action. Now, the Youth Climate Change Conference of 2025 in Namibia is, of course, a great example of young people taking action and advocating for climate change solutions by providing a platform for youth voices to be heard. The conference aimed to empower young leaders to drive climate action in their communities. And I think, I would emphasize to say, for those youth who probably didn't attend this conference, maybe because of geographical location or transport-wise, it's never too late. There are still more conferences, I think, that are always coming up, many discussions being done. Some are being done online, youth coming together from different nations. And if you are somebody who is really interested in educating yourself or being an advocate, of course, in terms of climate change, then you can always go ahead and educate yourself on such and ask questions where you think you can get this information. I think sometimes it really just starts with us trying to reach out to the people. But yeah, nonetheless, let's take a commercial break. We'll be back shortly. This is On the Reading is Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana ono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ngetashake ngeshe faa omarudi kayo loka opone ujendi finawa nukumuna oijamo ili nawa ninge Fada Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Timwe, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Watatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. And of course, now I'm joined in studio by my colleague, Dwight Links. A very good afternoon to you, Dwight Links. Welcome to On the Reader News Analysis.
Happy. You don't have to say the whole name, but.
I know, right? But there's no way. I'm used to that.
People have been seeing me for 5 years now. But yeah, thank you once again, Happy, and good afternoon to the listeners. And I hope you guys are enjoying the show, and I hope you're enjoying, obviously, the daily programming that we provide you with.
Yeah. Now, Dwight, of course, you are attending an event that the National Planning Commission organized. Just exactly tell us, what is that event, or what was that event all about, and what did it aim to reach? What was its aim, and what really transpired?
All right. Thank you, Happy. And so the particular engagement that took place earlier today was known as the Development Partner Forum. This is obviously, as we do know here, in the Namibian context, Namibia has got a cluster of development partners. This is, if you put the UN aside and its sort of like subsidiary agencies, you've got China, you've got the EU, you've got Germany, you've got South Africa is obviously also in there,
mm-hmm.
and also a host of other particular, partners that play smaller roles in that regard. So this particular engagement took place earlier today with a particular focus on youth development and trying to unlock, which has mm-hmm. been so far the 4 month theme since NDP6's launch in
mm-hmm.
July.
Mm-hmm.
Has been this youth economic discussion, because as we know, back in September, the National Youth Fund was launched. And that in its own right has obviously generated much news and much talking points, both negative and positive.
Yeah.
And then obviously also we had in the subsequent weeks and months after that September launch, sporadic discussions taking place, like they were, okay, not sporadic, but rather sort of like fragmented discussions speaking to the same thing. So you would have had, for example, the public-private forum discussion that took place after that in October. Then you had the other engagements where smaller brackets like the Green Hydrogen Summit here and the Oil and Gas Summit there, and all of them basically spoke about the same thing as well, trying to get that youth development focus going. Youth economic empowerment, or unlocking youth economic empowerment to that extent. However,
mm-hmm.
and I know there's always a however, and I always like throwing in the punchline in there in between. There was a pretty pivotal and prominent presentation that was done from the Africa Peer Review Mechanism, the APRM, Happy. And I did not know that this was actually an AU affiliate body. This particular presentation helped us to understand the impacts and some of the things that are actually sort of like the barriers that could allow for youth economic empowerment to take place. And this was
What are some of those barriers?
I'm getting to that
okay.
now. And the presentation was done by a doctor in philosophy, not a medical doctor,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Alphonse Witbien. From the APRM, and he, although the data set he analyzed from the report itself, which was brought out in 2021, obviously relies on older census data of Namibia and particular sort of like impacts, because we all know that our the labor force survey of the latest census came out at the start of this year,
yes.
and it's based upon the 2023 census.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are still certain particular themes that emanate and still technically flow over from whatever you find in the 2011 census and the 2018 labor force survey regarding youth unemployment and barriers to youth economic empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
They still cascade over into the 2023 situation, primarily because you have to look at things like education, access to education, those that completed education, and mm-hmm. those ultimately that participated in achieving higher forms of education. So, Actually, let me stop there, Happy. Is there a question that you quickly want to interject there before I continue with that train of thought?
I also want you to tell us on what Executive Director of the National Planning Commission, that is Ibn Ashandi, reaffirmed on Namibia's commitment to achieving our national development goals. What's the talking point on that aspect?
Well, the talking point of this particular aspect falls within the particular ambit of the forum that took place in terms of bringing the development partners together of Namibia so that Namibia can achieve its particular economic goals, which are all encased in NDP 6,
mm-hmm.
As quickly as possible. Now, at the heart of it, and I'm sorry, Happy to correct you live on air. Mm-hmm. Mr. Nashandi's name is Ibn. It's an Arabic name.
I say Ibn.
Yeah, you say Ibn.
No, please.
But you have to, but it's like Ibn, in Afrikaans, mm-hmm. or in German, it's the name Ibn. Mm-hmm. But you say like Ibn. You just flow over it.
Ibn.
Yeah. So, Mr. Nashandi's particular contribution at the start, obviously it was just, introducing the whole discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But it was centered on the notion of achieving Namibia's development goals. Now, you take that particular discussion and you look at the presentation that was provided by Mr. Witbien from the APRM to the barriers, because you've got to look at, what's going on. The positives that are happening so far is the overproduction of skilled Namibians from our big three universities. So when I say overproduction, for example, every year we hear about these lovely statistics of so many people graduated, so many thousand achieving these particular things. And then you look at the size of Namibia's employed, the cadre, meaning.
And the percentage of the unemployed.
Yes. So you look at the percentage of the employed people in the economy that have achieved higher education, which is less than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the people, unfortunately, the unemployed bracket, which stands to that lovely 60%, almost 60% discussion that I highlighted.
Yeah.
And in the youth unemployment scenario, it's also at a significant statistic because it's also at above 50%. Mm-hmm. That's just youth, and youth ends at 34 in the NSA's particular classification, because from 35 upwards, that's now when my generation kicks in.
I'm still a youth.
Yeah, so you're still in the youth scenario. So when we look at that, when you look at those particular dynamics taking place right there, which also saw the recent readjustment of that national youth fund discussion, mm-hmm. the age readjustment mm-hmm. to 45, to the age bracket of 45, because they push it up from 30, they push it up from 35 to 45, adding
another.
Which
is a really good thing. What do you say? Before you continue, what do you say?
Firstly, I know I'm one of the particular culprits that have cited and stated that, if you look at trying to get business ideas from the youth, it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Because many youth, and we all were at that bracket of 18, 19, 21, up to 25, you are not thinking of putting up formal business, understanding business plans, understanding accounting principles, understanding first in, first out accounting principles and last in, first out accounting principles, understanding a balance sheet and all those. You didn't care. You just wanted access to the money. You just wanted to get rich quickly. You just wanted to do things, which obviously shows that there is a clear misunderstanding from the people that you're trying to help and how the mismatch for the program is technically not clearly understood, which also factors into the discussion Helmut and I had on the home run regarding the ease of business discussion that the Namibian-German community in Namibia tried to introduce, and they had a few of the economists there at the coast in Swakop back in last month as well. No, not in last month, in September as well. And that particular discussion, Happy, was also one based upon where one of the economists cited there primarily, let's try and understand the actual things that not prohibit, but they limit and they restrict the ease of doing business. At that discussion specifically, I brought up the financial action, not the financial action task force, the business rescue task force that President Geingob had established after COVID.
Okay.
I downloaded that report, and in that discussion that Helmut and I had here, there were key recommendations on the front page of that report. The key recommendations were amend the regulations and the legislation in Namibia, which is regulations and legislation aimed at punishing you as a business person when your business fails, but rather to entice that same business person who had employed people to try again. Come back, try again, do this thing. We don't want to put you in jail. We should not try to punish you and then take your property.
Because if business is fail and win, win and loss.
Exactly. But if you go to countries like America, if you go to Europe,
yeah,
the business environment there is set up so that you should not actually be failing as a business. It should be sustainable. Now, we preach sustainability here, but we preach it to the public sector and to the parts of the population that technically are not in the business realm. And then when you get to the realm of get into the business sector, Namibia's MSME environment has a failure rate of way above 60 to 70% in the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now, in entrepreneurship, you're taught that in the first 2 years, that's the make or break years of any small business or any new business.
Yeah.
In Namibia, make that 5 years. Happy? You cannot think like the textbook, because the real world and the textbook are
two different things.
Two different environments. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, the textbook averages out a certain particular scenario for you. Mm-hmm. So you technically have to understand that you've probably got a lot, what they call that, you have to make an accommodation for a lot more time, or you have to think in the worst case scenario for the worst case scenario that could hit your business mm-hmm. as a new business, a startup or all that particular lingo.
Mm-hmm.
So at the heart of this, the philosophical question that pops out is, does the youth understand what role they've got to play that older generations who are now trying to entice them to get into youth economic activities, do they understand what role they've got to play? And then the single most important thing that the UN country representative, Madam Hoplang Pororo, had cited, she also just stood there and gave a quick comment and interjection, is that the most important development partner that was not in that room at that forum was the private sector representatives.
Mm, you see? And they always say that themselves, the private sector representatives.
But where do you find the private sector, Happy?
I don't know, man. You can call us.
We are the private sector. We, Eagle FM, we are private sector. We are busy producing. We're not going and sitting in a forum having panel discussions and then enjoying the catering and then, you know, the lovely view of everyone's particular, you know, academic value addition at that particular platform, which does not translate to anything in the external environment, meaning in the real life situation.
Yeah.
What are you going to implement? How are you going to achieve your goals? Mm-hmm. Is it going to translate to an aspect of, let's say, a profitable endeavor? Because the most important thing that took place, that you can see taking place in the Namibian economy, and this is something that the NSA had cited. The NSA did a census mapping of all buildings across the country.
Okay.
So the NSA happy went to every region in 2023, because those reports came out in 2023. They went to every region. They went and counted every building for every settlement, you know, formal settlement and local authority. And they classified them what is public, what is private, and private and residential, and what is private and business. In many small towns across Namibia, the biggest presence is public service buildings. So you can think about municipalities, ministerial extension offices, or ministerial, you know, offices across the country, and regional authority buildings.
Mm-hmm. Councillors' offices.
Which is most government, Dochman, happy man.
Clinics and hospitals.
Yeah, all those guys. And then followed on by that, you get the private sector guys. But the largest private sector presence you found in every town of Namibia is the food retail sector. So food retail, you're looking at all these retailers here close to us.
Yeah.
You're looking at all those retailers that you sometimes don't find in Windhoek, but you know they are present everywhere else.
Yeah.
So if you look at the presence like that, that obviously means there's one particular private sector stakeholder that is doing its part. Because here's the thing, Happy. When a new town gets classified by what's that commission's name? The Delimitation and Demarcation Commission, where they have to go and inform the president and the relevant ministries that if a new constituency has to be set up, if a new town has to be declared, or if a new region possibly has to be created because of population dynamics.
Mm-mm-mm.
When that happens, the food retail sector realizes, here's a new town. We're going to go build a building in that town.
Yeah.
And when they do that, they're going to rent people, they're going to hire people from that community to work in that shop. They're going to go build a mall. And then there's going to be businesses brought to that mall.
Yeah.
Because they realize a new town had been declared with a new local authority, with a new mayor. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a development budget and they're going to start building roads and stuff and do that investments in that localized scenario. And then the private sector shows up. So now, if you see the experiment that I'm showing you, mm-hmm. which is an experiment of development,
mm-hmm.
the experiment shows you literally that it's unknown. It's something that you can measure and it's something that is proven to be working.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put money in investing in infrastructure,
yeah.
then you know the private sector looks at it and they go like, oh, you built a tar road here. And I see that there are houses there.
Yeah.
So I can put a shop right up opposite those houses because mm-hmm. then people can walk over.
Yes.
If you know anyone that lives in Ochimiza, for example, if you've ever looked at the inconvenience of Ochimiza's design.
Yes.
Do you know where's the closest service station?
Oh my word. Is it
from Ochimiza?
Namco?
It's that Namco service station.
Oh my.
Now, Ochimiza is growing so fast.
Yeah.
If you look at how far that Namco service station is, which is on Komasdal side of the road, it's not on Ochimiza's side
no.
of the road.
Yes.
And if you think to the distance that you've got to drive to where you find the Achterland, Sevenland, all those other guys mm-hmm. there at the back,
mm-hmm.
ne?
Mm-hmm.
How far do they have to drive to get to that Namco service station? Pretty far.
Pretty far.
Now, any person obviously would have cited, there's a lot of people with money living there who have salaries, and no one has positioned a business, a service station in the middle of the thing. But then you also go look at the compact design of Ochimiza. It's pretty compact. It's not pretty much space. And with a service station, you need to have certain particular environmental requirements, meaning yeah. homes cannot border onto the thing mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. it's a pretty explosive substance you're dealing with.
Unfortunately, we have one in Greenwell, but I know that's not where the
no,
discussion
but Greenwell is
coming.
Very
no,
far.
I know, but then you know what? Now that you, just the fact that you're saying, the requirements.
Yeah,
the layout
look
of
the
a service
design.
Station.
Yeah.
We have one in Greenwell, Matongo. You know, not the one of Kwasa Kwasa, but built exactly close to our homes.
No, yeah, but,
and you're wondering who approved this plan. But
no,
yeah.
but you have to look at, for example, that Greenwell Matongo. The dimension.
Yeah.
It was because the old layout of the urban areas mm-hmm. and the extended urban areas of Windhoek that lead into Komasdal and Karatura.
Yeah.
For that scenario, you can see that the planning was already preset. That was planning already thought of.
Mm.
From Greenwell, you can see La France, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There's also a whole bunch of service stations there.
Mm-hmm.
So that means any motorist, any particular person that needs, you know, like
fuel.
No, not fuel. Service stations provide convenience stores as well.
Mm.
So you can't put a full retail shop in an urbanized sense scenario. Service stations play a particular role as well. Because from that road, what's that road's name? That La France road, the old
Monte Cristo road.
The old Monte Cristo road. It's got a different name now.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. They changed the name recently, like 2 years back.
No.
Down that Monte Cristo
road. La France road?
No, it doesn't have that name, Happy. But that road that runs past La France to the Havanas and Okurengavas down that way.
Mm-hmm.
What do you find first there? There's a robot there. You find there's a shopping center with a service station right next to it.
Yeah.
So there are three, you see the oversaturation
and
the representation of services close to all those houses there. But when you get to Ochimiza, the planning was not of similar replication.
Mm-mm.
It's actually that Ochimiza is so densely populated, but there's no space to bring any other conveniences to Ochimiza.
Mm-hmm.
There's like one or two shops in the middle.
Yeah.
But what is needed is a petrol station in the middle, not a petrol station as you come into Komasdal. So when you look at the scenario like that, obviously the census mapping discussion factors into avenues for what they call that, because the food retail and the retail sectors of Namibia are the quickest avenues for people to get employment. They allow you to get new jobs. They allow you to introduce people that didn't pass grade 12 or grade mm-hmm. 10, you know, the World Cup knockout phases that we had to endure in public school settings.
Yeah.
They allow you to access jobs because you can either go and work as a petrol attendant or you can work as a cashier in the convenience shop, or you can work if it's a mall. Like what happened with Okahania, a whole bunch of people got employment at that mall that's on the other side of Okahania, opposite the national road.
Okay.
People got jobs there at that mall. And you can literally see it allows for the ability of money to move.
Mm.
Now, the unfortunate thing is, you know, all the particular development planners in one room are not talking about how to make money move.
What are they talking about?
They're talking about how to get us urban population youth representatives, whether you're from 18 to 45 now, because I'm now also in that bracket, under the 45 bracket as well. Now we need to go deal with agriculture. The pivotal question that needs to, that emerges from this, Happy, is if you're an urban person, do you really want to be go toiling in the sun out there in the urban, in the rural areas? Not just fighting, not just combating all versions of insects and insect life.
Dwight, the way
but still, if you know, factoring.
Please forgive Dwight. He didn't grow up in the village.
No. My mom is a farmer's child. My mom was a farmer's child. So I know what insects look, and I come from a town, you know, 90 k's here where we literally know what insect life looks like. But still, the dimension is, is it now about, you know, going back to agriculture, but trying to push urban people to agriculture? And before that, guys, we'll have an ad break in a short while. But just wrapping up before that, do you really want to send urbanized people back to the agricultural scene, which is in the root? No, it won't fail. It's just a question of allotment and the positioning of skills.
Yeah.
That's it.
Dwight, you know what? I really enjoyed and I appreciated this conversation. And I sure hope, I think I always appreciate when you make it, you know, very understandable, ne? Explaining
well,
the terms.
Well, we have to do that.
Yes.
Because in many cases, I just now heard for the first time that there was a review done of Namibia's particular, the reasons for youth unemployment. Even though it was sort of like slightly mismatched from the actual up-to-date labor statistics of Namibia, but we actually need more updated statistics.
Yes.
But yeah, so that was the scenario.
Well, we pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On The Reading News Analysis.
Lipura nengeno wapobwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. Is jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet? Kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Get the best for less at USave. 2 kilograms of my agricultured milk, just 48.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Rietfontein nectar juice, just 34.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of King Polony, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr packet soup, 30 Namibian dollars for any 5. That's just 6 Namibian dollars each. Take a break with Nestle Kit Kat chocolates, just 10.99 Namibian dollars. And a 2 liter Co-E cool drink, only 12.99 Namibian dollars. USave, your low budget grocery store. Where good food costs less.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%. Is that we had been there before. We've had 6%.
Okay, now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, we're starting off in South Africa where the G20 report has revealed that inequality in 83% of countries.
So a new G20 report on inequality has revealed that 83% of countries in the world, representing 90% of the global population, meet the World Bank's definition for high inequality or of high inequality. The report warns that such nations are 7 times more likely to face democratic decline than those with more equal society. Let's speak to Dr. Wanga Zembe Mkabile, member of the Extraordinary Committee of Independent Experts on Global Inequality, who worked on this report. A very good evening to you, ma'am. Good to have you on the program. So the figures are staggering, depressing, devastating, some would say. But when you consider our context in South Africa and our inequality levels that are so blatant, so bare to see, it's hardly surprising, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. And the fact that our South African government initiated this report does bring a bit of hope, considering that we are the most unequal country in the world. But as the report shows, and as you've just quoted yourself, with 90% of the world's population represented by those 83% of the countries of the world, experiencing inequality, is certainly not a phenomenon unique to South Africa.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about... my apologies, Doctor. I'll allow you to finish, but I wanted to show actually everyone who's watching at the moment some of those numbers to give better context to what we are discussing. Let's bring up some of the key findings from the report, which was handed over to President Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday, because South Africa is going to be hosting the upcoming G20 summit. When you look at poverty and insecurity, 2.3 billion people in the world face food insecurity. That's 335 million more since 2019. So half of the world's population lacks basic healthcare services, while 1.3 billion people have been pushed into poverty by medical costs. Global poverty reduction has also stalled, and the top 1% in the world is getting richer, basically, while everyone else is getting poorer. Dr. Zembe Mkabile, so given that this issue, the high levels of inequality globally, have long been diagnosed, why have the interventions so far failed to tip the scales in an adequate way?
I mean, I think in part it's because actually, sort of historically, the focus has been on poverty, but less so on inequality. So indeed, the focus on inequality is relatively new, if you compare to how long we have spoken about poverty. Previously there was a thought that inequality is not really bad. You know, that you can have a country prospering, even if it's unequal. But what has made it so critical now is these figures that you've presented, starting with the one stating that 90% of the world's population is experiencing is in a context of inequality. And then, of course, the fact that the top 1%, the richest, as you've said, have become much richer. Our report shows that, in fact, the top 1% of the richest people have captured 41% of new wealth in the last 25 years, compared to the bottom half of the poorest, who've only captured 1% of that. We are seeing far more inequality than we've ever seen before. The rich are richer than they've ever been. And one can argue the poor are poorer than they've ever been before. So that's what brings the sense of urgency now.
So objectively then, with the G20 leaders going to meet in South Africa on the 22nd and the 23rd of November, objectively, what can be achieved at those meetings that would help to change this and address these alarming levels of inequality?
Thank you for that question. So, of course, you know, a problem of this magnitude is not going to be solved overnight. The report is an opportunity for us to, you know, to present to the world leaders and challenge them to listen to read the information, the statistics, the analysis that has gone into it, as well as the policy recommendations. But what we are really focused on is establishing a permanent new structure that will be the International Panel on Inequality, along the same lines as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which was established to then, you know, be this structure that would periodically report on climate change and progress and so on. And so this new IPI, as we call it, the new International Panel on Inequality structure that we've proposed, mm-hmm. would then serve that function of periodically reporting on inequality, monitoring progress, and making policy recommendations that decision makers can make in real time.
Right. And one of the findings from this report is that in countries where inequality is as extreme as we've been discussing, that means or puts democratic decline or decline in democratic standards. It makes it 7 times more likely for there to be that decline. And I wonder if that is then the wake-up call that the world's elite, the politicians, etc., would need to ultimately get their act together and address this.
Yes, absolutely. Because, I mean, essentially, you know, the word democracy means for the people by the people. It's collective governance. And so what you have with these levels of inequality when they are this extreme, how it undermines that process is that you basically have a society that's only serving a few, and people can't, you know, people won't tolerate that, won't allow it. But also importantly, even for the rich, it's what we've tried to say with this report and what the IPI would seek to do is to let them know, along with politicians, that this is not sustainable even for them, right? It's not sustainable for anyone. The economic growth of countries is not going to continue and survive if we continue to see this extreme picture of inequality. So it doesn't serve anyone in the long run.
Dr. Wanga Zembe Mkabile, good to talk to you. Member of the Extraordinary Committee of Independent Experts on Global Inequality, speaking to us after a report was handed over to President Cyril Ramaphosa on alarming levels of inequality.
Meanwhile, on South Africa's manufacturing activities, the PMI declines.
The S&P Global South Africa PMI lost momentum in October, marking the first contraction in private sector activity since March. Economist Dr. Azad Jamin says the outcome is disappointing, especially given that the other indicators, such as credit demand and motor vehicle sales, had suggested a slight improvement in South Africa's overall economic activity.
The manufacturing sector is not participating in that uptick, and there are a couple of factors that could be weighing down on the manufacturing sector. The first is, of course, U.S. tariffs, especially on the automotive sector. And the second, linked indirectly to that, is the fact that there is a threatened strike in the automotive industry by workers wanting to higher wages. And the combination of these two factors may have weighed down on the manufacturing PMI and the responses of manufacturers in the private sector that they provided in compiling the PMI.
But it wasn't all bad news. The index points to cost pressures easing as a stronger rand helped reduce import and purchasing costs.
In part because of the weakness of demand in the economy. But what it will contribute towards is lower inflation than many had anticipated, and with that, the increased probability of further reductions in interest rates. And the combination of those two factors, lower inflation, of course, meaning that wages are keeping up better to the with the increase in the cost of living, and then lower interest rates, the combination should help to prevent the economy from sliding back too far in the year ahead.
The index notes that despite these challenges, business sentiment remained cautiously positive. About 34% of firms expect output growth in the coming months, compared with 5% anticipating a decline. Nosipho Radebe, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Ethiopia's reforms show progress, but many still struggle.
Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, addressing the parliament late last week, said the country's foreign debt has fallen dramatically from $23 billion to $4.5 billion in just 6 years. Annual revenue, which once stood at around $3 billion, is now projected to reach $17 billion. While inflation has been brought down to 11.7%, its lowest level in years.
By every measure, the speed at which Ethiopia's economic reform has repaired the imbalances and the result it has achieved can be considered remarkable. This is tangible growth that can be seen and proven. Unlike in previous times, it is not only numerical. Anyone with good senses can recognize Ethiopia's current economic growth just by looking around the city.
For small business owners like Seifa Gabriel, a mattress retailer in the capital Addis Ababa, however, the gains of the reforms have not yet translated into notable benefits.
There was a time when, due to the shortage of foreign currency, supply was limited. Now, although the supply is sufficient, prices remain high because of the increased forex rates. When exchange rates go up, importers raise their prices, and we have no choice but to do the same.
Yeah. Higher rental and transportation costs for traders like Seifa add to the price of commodities, which in turn limits consumers' purchasing power.
While inflation may be slowing down to 11.7%, as Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed stated, at Shola Market, one of the largest in Addis Ababa, prices, especially for food items, remain very high. Analysts caution that a drop in the inflation rate does not necessarily mean prices are falling.
When we say the inflation is declining by 11.7% in October, that is year-to-year growth, it doesn't mean that there is an absolute decline in inflation. Rather than this shows that there is a decline in the acceleration of inflation. Still, the food inflation is high in absolute term or in absolute value. But when we see in comparison to the previous period, to the previous year's acceleration rate, still the inflation is relatively stable in comparison to previous periods.
Despite this, the slowing inflation, analysts say, is a good sign of macroeconomic stability.
When the inflation is managed, it means that the purchasing power of the citizens, the population increases. It means that the investment might improve, because when there is inflation, it consumes the savings. So when inflation is managed, the investment increases, the purchasing power of the citizens also improves. So overall, the economy starts to like improve.
For ordinary Ethiopians, the journey to fully benefiting from these reforms is far from over. Still, the slowing inflation hints at a step toward greater economic stability. Deka Toma for CGTN, Addis Ababa.
Meanwhile, Oltambo District Municipality focuses on improving tourism.
The Oltambo District and other local municipalities were exploring the wild coast. The deep rural parts are a favorite among international tourists, while the beaches are hit with locals. The visit by authorities was an opportunity for tourism operators to engage the local government. They say the area has plenty of potential but faces several challenges.
We offer a lot of activities and people have a chance to see some tourist attractions or heritage sites like caves, blowholes, waterfalls. There's lots you can experience around Port St. John's. Basically, we want people to see more or experience more. This actually, we have added such adventures like kayaking, your cycling, your ferry experience, even boat cruise as well.
Bad roads and poor water infrastructure amongst the biggest challenges in the area.
There's pit toilet.
We use pit toilets and we cannot build flush toilets because we have a big water challenge. Our roads are also bad. As you can see, there are no signboards. We are asking government to help us. Yes, the Oor Tambo Municipality and Port St. John's Municipality assisted me.
If Oor Tambo supported me with this equipment, like bicycles, kayaks, then it's a good thing to come and see if what they give me, am I using it? Or is that doing its purpose to serve people? Just because we are not here just for fun, we are here to serve people. Because some of these things are antidepressant, like kayaking. You have to come here and calm down. You'll feel much better.
The Oor Tambo District Municipality believes a lot still needs to be done to assist tourism operators.
We needed to take a visit with our political leadership to tourism products across the district, but more importantly, meet those people that are participating in tourism so that we can get a sense of the kind of challenges they're confronting, so that we can then plan, having had a feeling of the challenges they are confronting. So we're very proud this afternoon because we've got a sense of what our people are experiencing. We have identified challenges of infrastructure to tourism projects.
Locals have been urged to protect tourists in the area as they play a big role in community development. Lwandile Mbulani, Port St. John's in the Eastern Cape.
Fuel blockage strains Mali's economy.
A park at Kohogo in Cote d'Ivoire, loaded up with desperately needed fuel. The truck drivers are preparing for another perilous journey into Mali. Malian trucks fill up at Yomusokoro or Abidjan and then cross the border by the cities of Tangrela or Pogo. But attacks on tankers on major highways have been rampant since the Jenin blockade. They now travel under military escort once inside Mali until their arrival in Bamako.
My truck broke down and I was on my way to park it. On the road they had burned two tankers. The drivers were dead. This was near Sikasso, but they didn't harm me. They asked me to divert and continue on my way.
This has prompted some Ivorian transport companies to halt road travel into Mali.
My driver even left the truck in Abidjan despite me telling him to take the goods to Mali. He confirmed that if it meant taking my goods into Mali, he would rather leave the truck.
But despite the risks, other drivers still choose to brave the roads.
Today, we must give ourselves a risk premium considering the current situation of the country. You never know if you'll come back alive. We do it because we love our country. We don't want Malians to lack fuel.
We place ourselves in God's hands, and if we die, it is for the good cause.
For a country that relies on fuel imports from neighboring Senegal and Cote d'Ivoire, Jenin's strategy is squeezing the landlocked country's economy. The fuel blockade is worsening living conditions for millions as commodity prices rise. But security analysts say Jenin has neither the intention nor the military capability to seize Bamako, which it briefly attacked last year. They suggest the likely goal is to trigger another coup, which will further destabilize the country and allow Jenin to amass more weapons and funds. Sophia Shimechero, CGTN.
Abuja Conference seeks faith-based solutions to insecurity in West Africa.
It's a gathering of clerics, policymakers, and peace advocates from across West Africa and beyond, including Liberia, Egypt, and Morocco. The conference, hosted by the ECOWAS Parliament and the Jamiatu Ansaruddin organization, is exploring how faith and governance can work together to tackle insecurity and violent extremism.
Our objectives are clear. Review the current state of the traditional Islamic Sufism and its impact on vulnerable children, raise awareness on the security risks associated with the marginalization of children in traditional Islamic school, build consensus among Islamic leaders on the need to modernize, promote the regulation of harmful religious practices that compromise peace and security.
The Sahel now accounts for over half of global terrorism deaths, with an estimated 12 million illegal weapons in circulation. ECOWAS warns that Africa's youth could become a security risk if extremists continue to exploit poverty and exclusion.
We must work to prevent radicalization, particularly of young people. I emphasize the role of women and youth. They are the principal victims. Youth are instrumentalized to perpetuate violence. We target vulnerable communities, vulnerable people. And it is time for us to see a concerted effort put up by both Islamic and Christian leaders. They must come to the fore and form joint efforts to combat and fight against terrorism, which has caused so much destruction.
The forum promotes non-military approaches to counter terrorism, using education and moral values to prevent violence before it starts.
We feel that ECOWAS has a role to support that process, including through the madrasas, through the schools, teaching community tolerance, teaching young people to accept each other as brothers and sisters in order to bring about social cohesion. It's very, very important. Abuse, intolerance, and radicalization have to be eschewed. And we can achieve much of that by catching the young people young in the schools.
Organizers say the conference will end with a roadmap for peace, focusing on education reforms and youth inclusion, hoping to build a West Africa where faith unites, not divides. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
A UK startup is recovering precious and critical metals without energy-hungry smelting methods. DesCycle says it uses deep eutectic solvents, which selectively dissolve metals from shredded circuit boards and other e-waste, while leaving most non-metal components behind. The company's chief technology officer, Rob Harris, says it's more energy efficient and environmentally sustainable.
So if you think about the sugar in your morning coffee, it dissolves the metal selectively but doesn't touch the non-metal components. What we then do is filter that the plastics away from the liquids, and what we do is we selectively recover those metals directly back as metal solids, as powders, from the liquids again.
They say the recovered metals can then be reused in new products. According to the UN's Global E-Waste Monitor in 2024, less than a quarter of the world's e-waste was properly collected and recycled in 2022, leaving about $62 billion worth of recoverable natural resources unaccounted for. Non-profit Material Focus runs electronic recycling campaigns in the UK. Its 2024 analysis estimates British households throw away about 103,000 tonnes of electricals each year and are storing around 880 million unused items. Executive Director Scott Butler says that rising tensions over critical minerals around the globe overlook the resources in our landfills.
All the shenanigans of 2025 with calls on taking over Denmark, disputes over land in Ukraine, big mines coming in Latin America and geopolitical relations with China. This is all about the materials that's inside this urban mine of tech. It's lithium, it's cobalt, it's nickel, it's gold, it's aluminium and steel. And this is why it's really, really important. This isn't just a pile of old tech, a pile of mess. This is the future.
DesCycle is set to incorporate its technology into existing waste processing operations at a leading UK electrical waste processor.
Donald Trump's tariffs have been questioned in high-stakes Supreme Court hearing. Let's take a listen.
Now, it is a huge day for President Trump's tariff policy. The Supreme Court is currently hearing arguments over the legality of the way the trade tariffs were imposed. And according to the president himself, the stakes could not be higher. Well, the case centers around whether he has the authority to impose sweeping tariffs on imports under a law designed for use during a national emergency. So let's get the thoughts of Justin Wolfers, Professor of Economics at the University of Michigan. And Justin, great to have you on the program again. This is going to be a hugely significant decision, isn't it?
Very big day. And if you love tariffs, if you hate tariffs, it's an emotional roller coaster.
It is unclear, even if Donald Trump loses, whether he'll actually abide by the decision. But let's put that to one side. Give me your assessment of the impact that tariffs have had there in the US and elsewhere.
I think actually there's two sets of impacts. One is the direct one, which is tariffs raise costs. Those higher costs lead to lower profits for American businesses, or when they pass them on, higher prices for American consumers. That's the fairly direct thing. The second thing may be even larger, which is that America has shown itself to be a combative and often unwilling trading partner, an unreliable trading partner, and it's sort of tipped the bucket on the global trading system. And so you're seeing countries all around the world reorganizing, looking for more stable friends, and America's reputation, quite sadly, has never been lower among folks who otherwise would be our allies.
And of course, it has created a huge amount of uncertainty. I mean, Donald Trump keeps talking about trillions being raised. Sometimes he uses the figure 17 trillion. Sometimes it's 19 trillion. I mean, if that was true, we wouldn't have a government shutdown. But what is the truth of money raised and where it is going?
Mate, if any of those numbers were true, we could all be on yachts right now. It would be terrific. I don't know why the bloke doesn't just say 11 gajillion and get on with it. When you're making numbers up, just be transparent about it. Look, the reality is that a tariff is a tax. Roughly speaking, this tax raises about $30 billion in revenue per month. The president sometimes boasts about that. Ironically, as we're speaking right now, his solicitor general is in front of the Supreme Court arguing that this tariff is not a tax, that it is meant to shape what others do rather than to raise revenue, and that the revenue is merely incidental.
Okay, and with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis.